on the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
It's been a Christmas tradition here for many, many years, almost two decades, because this is the 20th edition of Christmas in My Heart, a collection of old-fashioned Christmas stories compiled and edited by Joe Wheeler. It's from Pacific Press, and Joe has had Pacific Press and a couple of other publishers through that 20-year cycle, but one thing has not changed, and that is the quality of the wonderful stories that have been suggested to him, have been sent to him, or that he has unearthed himself. Joe, it is a great pleasure to welcome you back to On the Bookshelf.
Well, it's good to be with you. It hardly would seem Christmas if we didn't get together again.
That is certainly the case here. So, 20th edition. Did you ever have the wildest dream when you first got started on Christmas in My Heart that you would one day be coming out with the 20th edition of this series?
Not hardly. You may remember that back there was that unnumbered number one back in
yes.
1992 that the publisher, Review and Herald at that time, was of little faith that it would go beyond that one, and I was of little faith that it would, and when it went through two printings before Christmas, and they said, can you do a second? That one came out, it bravely bore a two on it, like, you know, there might, who knows, it wouldn't be in the impossible for there to someday be a three, but to even imagine that it would become the longest Christmas story series in America was utterly beyond any of us.
Well, it's remarkable. And this is your 70th book that's been released in which you have been involved. Some of them were runs that you wrote all by yourself. Many of them are anthologies, and you personally chose the short stories to include. And for those people who have not heard us talk about this over the years, and for them this is kind of a new phenomenon, tell us again, how do you choose the stories that are included in each year's edition of Christmas in My Heart?
Well, you know, I think that probably is the secret of its survival. Well, that and the fact that I was just telling someone today that the fact that it's still here is definitely a God thing and not a Joe Wheeler thing, because five times in recent years it appeared that the doors were finally closed, that its run was over, and yet each time God opened another door, and that's why I say again and again that there is a higher power than me that wants this series to stay going. And it's also why I take no credit for it, because the fact that it's still here just defies all the laws of probability, because if that were not so, we'd have plenty of Christmas story series that would still be around after this many years, but we don't. I don't know of another one that ever did. It's possible, but I've never heard of one. But in answer to your question, why, other than being a God thing, I think it goes back to several things. One is that you may remember when we had our discussion last year, in my introduction, I stated the question, which was the greatest? And I bring out the prototype in my mind that years ago when I was directing a concert stage series in Texas, and at that time the pianist Roger Williams was at the peak of his career,
mm-hmm.
and we had booked him three times, and after one of the concerts I was so impressed, because whenever he would perform, the grand piano was out of tune by intermission, and his tux was ring wet.
Wow.
So we had to he had to change, and we had to retune the piano, and then afterwards he would play encores till the proverbial cows came home. And so I asked him, Roger, when was your greatest concert of your career? And without a millisecond, he says, tonight. And I said, huh? Because I thought he would say Carnegie Hall or La Scala or some group, because I knew he performed all around the world. And he said, Joe, years ago I dealt with this issue, and that is that how do I avoid peaking and then going downhill for the rest of my career? And he said, I determined that only if I performed every concert as if, and prepared for it as if it would be the greatest concert of my career, could I avoid a long down slide?
Hmm.
And I thought, man, that's fascinating, but it didn't really register other than something in my brain. But when Christmas in My Heart came along, and we had the opportunity to go to number two, I made a vow to God that just as Roger Williams had determined, that every book that would ever come out bearing my name after that time would be the best book it was humanly possible to produce. And I have stayed with that. Now, there are certainly other factors for why it's still here. One of them you and I have talked about many times, and that is that most story anthologists, in fact, I don't know of another one that's crazy enough to do what I do. Most of them, when they put together collections of short stories, they play the quote, great writers. I frequently say in interviews that I believe there are no great writers, there are only great stories.
Mm.
And great writers often produce shoddy stories. And unknown writers sometimes produce incredible stories. And so it is the power of the story alone that determines whether or not it makes it into one of our collections. And then the other two factors are it has to have a spiritual dimension. It doesn't have to be overtly sectarian, certainly. In fact, I don't want it to be. But it does have to have the kind of values in it that you hope kids grow up internalizing. And then the other thing that we have talked about probably more than any other thing through the years is the Kleenex quotient. unless I cry in reading the story, it probably won't make it in, because I feel life is too short for me to read things that either don't move me deeply or take me somewhere I've never been before.
Yeah.
And so all of those things together, I think, are responsible for why the series is still with us after all these years.
In case you're just joining us, we are once again visiting with Dr. Joe Wheeler, who's come out with the 20th edition, the 20th issue of Christmas in My Heart. The first one came out in 92, and there's been one every year since. And some of those years, for the first 16 years, it was Review and Herald. And for the middle part of that, they were also released by Tyndale House, I think 8 through 13 were. And then Pacific Press picked this up in number 17, which was in 2008, and has carried it forward from this point. Also, we still have some of these cassettes. The issues 1 through 6 were also available on cassettes, and now on CD, I'm sure. And it's Joe reading these stories, which is a whole different experience all in itself. It's just amazing. And my understanding is, from the press stuff here, that you can buy this entire collection of the Christmas in My Heart books, issues 1 through 20, at a special price. Same almost $100 on it. So I think if you're new at this, then people should really, once they hear us talking about these books, they should really seriously consider investing in this set to share with their family, because there were stories that I remember from the very first edition that I still enjoy and I still like to reread every year.
Well, that's right. We have, in honor of it being our 20th year, we have personally advertised the series. Instead of $240, we have it. We're selling it almost at our cost at $140 for the 20 books, plus the shipping. And so people can get a hold of us from our address. Our website is joewheelerbooks.com, but our address is Box 1246, Conifer, Colorado 80433. That's 1246 Conifer, Conifer, Colorado 80433.
Now, Joe, let's take a look at this year's stories. And one of them, I was delighted to see that there was one story that you kept reading and reading and reading. And for 19 editions, you said, well, I really like the story, but it's just not right for the mix that's in this year. So I'm going to hold on to it, and the day will come when I will use this story. And the day came. And so on the 20th edition, here is this wonderful story that you're sharing with us for the first time, and you were waiting for just the right setting for it. It seems to me that there have been years where there were a lot of orphan stories, or there were a lot of overcoming adversity stories or poverty stories. There does seem to be kind of a general theme in this year of dealing with loneliness and being separated from those you love even more so than usual. Is that a conscious theme this year, or am I just
I wouldn't say it was conscious, and I realize that to a person doesn't have a strong relationship, or at least try to have a strong relationship with a higher power, this may not make sense. But years ago, one day I was struggling because I get letters from everywhere, and these letters are often very complimentary, and I have felt for a long time that the worst thing that can happen to an author is to begin to be proud of his or her work. And I know good and well that my own wisdom wells are very shallow and only God's are deep. And so I cringe when I get this kind of letter. I know that if I'm in a Barnes & Noble and there's a long line of people standing there wanting me to sign their books, that too is a strong temptation. And so one day the thought came to me when I was reading about Solomon in Scripture when he became king, and God asked him what gift he wanted, and he said, well, you know, I'm dumb, I don't know how to be a king, I would really like to become wise so that I can rule well. And supposedly God made him the wisest man other than Christ, who was, of course, half divine and not just straight human, in history. And so the thought came to me that nowhere in Scripture does it say that God wouldn't grant that gift to somebody else who asked for it. And so not having the chutzpah of Solomon to ask for a lifetime supply, I asked God for one day's worth. And I said, Lord, would you be willing to grant me access to your wisdom wells today? And I have, since that time, that particular prayer, I think, looking back at it, it's been somewhere between 8 and 10 years ago. And every day since then, that I'm having anything to do with creating books or stories or putting collections together, I pray that prayer of Solomon and ask, Lord, take me where you want me to go today. And when I'm writing a story, like the ones you're talking about, for many, many years now, I have been, before I ever choose a story topic, I ask God to give it to me. And sometimes I find that God tests me. He waits until sometimes 3-4 weeks before the final manuscript is due, and he still hasn't given me what I consider a good plot. But he's always come through. And then once he gives me the basic bare outlines of it, the first day that I'm writing, I ask him, Lord, help me choose the characters. Help me to choose the characters' names. And then each day that I'm writing, I say, Lord, take this story where you want it to go. And this is why I tell people who ask about how my stories come to be, that Joe Wheeler has no idea where the story is going to go, because every day I ask God to take it where he wants it to go. And through the years, I've had a lot of surprises. I just tag along and am amazed by some of the characters that I thought were going to be the dominant ones end up being minor ones, and the cameo ones end up running away with stories. And so that was true with one of the stories that Dobson chose as the Christmas story of the year for Focus on the Family, Evensong. The little girl ran away with the story. So consequently, in answer to your question, all those dimensions go into it.
I am reminded of a metaphor that I often use for those of us in the South, can be adapted for use in Colorado, that the Christian life is more like surfing. Your job is not to create the wave. Your job is to get on the wave and hang on for dear life, and that's the adventure of following Christ. And I would say you could use the same metaphor and adapt it for snow places and say that following Christ is like skiing down a slope you've never been on before. You didn't make the snow, and you didn't make the skis, but you're along for the ride, and it becomes the ride of your life.
I like that metaphor.
There were several stories that really jumped out at me, and so I want to mention them first and talk about them a little bit. One of them was from an author that I've come to really cherish because she has been featured in many of the editions, and the reason is because she writes extraordinary stories, and they're not all the same kind of stories, which is awfully cool too. And that, of course, is Margaret E. Sangster Jr.
Oh my!
And she has so many different kinds of stories that she writes, so that it's not every year she gets the same story and just changes the characters around. They're just completely different from edition to edition. And she wrote so many stories that you couldn't put them all in a collection of books, even if you just started making Margaret Sangster books.
That is true. Now, Margaret Sangster, what I found out is even the Library of Congress is confused about her because she's Margaret E. Sangster, and she had a famous writing grandmother who was Margaret E. Sangster also. And so the Library of Congress sometimes classifies one as having been written by the other. Mm. But the one that I use, Margaret E. Sangster Jr., she was such a prodigy that she was already an editor of sorts when she was 15.
Wow.
And became, I think, one of the leading, probably top two or three Christian writers of the first half of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And was known everywhere. And one of the things that I have really enjoyed most about, I think probably the best example that I'm, what I'm talking about is, I remember that a letter from Dr. James Dobson, and he said, Joan, you are correct. Neither of our ministries belongs to us. But isn't it a great ride?
Yeah.
And I've thought again and again that it is a great ride. And one of the neatest things about the ride, and it goes back to your surfboard analogy, is that I'm privileged to bring back authors such as Margaret Sangster that had all been all but forgotten and give her a whole new generation of fans. And
yes.
I think this was about my 13th Margaret Sangster book in 20 books, and you can see that more of her stories than any other writer have been included in the series.
Yeah, she's so good. The story that's included in the 20th issue of Christmas in My Heart is Santa Claus Had Red Hair, and it's the story of a young man who has another job, but apparently is interested in the daughter of a man who owns a very fancy store, and he figures a sneaky way to get a date with her is to offer to play Santa Claus in this snooty store. And him doing so seems like a lot of work at first, a lot more than he expected, but it has extraordinarily unforeseen circumstances for him and, we'll just say for him and some other people.
Now that you mention it, I'm glad you brought this up because I, too, am always being surprised by Margaret Sangster because many of her stories are, I would consider, rather formulaic. And they're quite predictable. And then you come across a story like this one that if I didn't know Margaret Sangster wrote it, I would doubt that she had because it's so different from every other Margaret Sangster story I've
mm-hmm.
ever read.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have had that happen to me a number of times, but I don't think any more graphically than this one. I love this story.
There's another story by Margaret Weymouth Jackson called Bright as a Christmas Tree, which is a really terrific story set in the pioneer days, almost Little House on the Prairie-ish kind of situation where you have an 18-year-old woman who's come back to be the school marm, and she has students who are older than she is. And Christmas is approaching, but so is a blizzard. And how it all turns out is pretty astonishing.
You know, along with that, both of the stories that you mentioned are Christmas romances. And what I have found is no genre that I have published in these books is more loved than the Christmas romances. And I'm a romantic myself, and so I do gravitate towards these stories. And it's interesting when people tell me which stories that they relate to the strongest. Almost invariably, it's those wonderful romances that they think about.
Well, now, you always get the last story in the book, too. It's an original story each time. So this is your 20th original story in this series. And this one is entitled Message in a Book. And I love the different way that you set up the story. A lonely woman who wants to meet a man with similar interests, and she leaves letters in particular library books with the hopes that the kind of person who would read this book might correspond with her, which is a pretty intriguing concept. And in these days of internet dating and everything, it's delightfully old-fashioned. It's just a very sweet story, and it was a lot of fun to read.
Now, that one... Also, of course, I asked God for the plot. And 3 years ago, I was doing a book signing in a Christian bookstore in Oregon. And one of the managers came to me afterwards. And she said, do you have a few minutes? I said, yeah. She says, I want to make a suggestion as to a story. I am very lonely. My husband walked off and left me a number of years ago. And I'm the kind of person who yearn to have someone to share life with. It just breaks my heart to wake up to a beautiful sunrise and not have anybody there to look at it with me, or to listen to great music together, or see a great painting, all the things in life that I love. I want to share, and yet I don't have that kind of person in my life. Would you please consider writing a story about loneliness? And that following year, I prayed about it, but that didn't come. God didn't impress me to do it that year. The next year, again, God did not impress me to do it on that. This year, the Lord said, take up loneliness. And that story generated from that. And I did track her down and send her a copy of the story. I haven't yet heard back from her. But that's how that particular story came to be. And I feel one of the strangest things that has occurred in recent years is that we assumed that all this electronic imagery would bring us closer together. What we're discovering is that it's taking us further away from each other. People will be sitting at a cafe table, and they'll be text messaging each other instead of talking to each other.
Yes.
And so this loneliness, I would say, is perhaps one of the key descriptive terms for what we are experiencing here in this time of our lives.
There's a short story by commentator and bass player Mike Huckabee, a former Arkansas governor.
That's right.
And it's a true story, and it's a sweet, sweet story called Hope. Then there's a story that's another true story by Penelope Hope called A Christmas in the East Bronx. And that's the one that you waited 20 years for just the right setting to include it. And wow, it was worth the wait. This is a wonderful, wonderful story and about a choir made up of a bunch of very different kind of people not a privileged neighborhood at all, in a pretty difficult neighborhood, and how they came together to make great music, but also how they were touched by a concert that they did for blind people, and it changed their hearts, and it's just a wonderful story.
Comments on before I leave my own story, I got a phone call during the last couple of days, and Jim Daly, who is the new president of Focus on the Family, also loves the kind of story that we have had for Focus all through the years. And he has chosen the message in a book as the Christmas story of the year this year for Focus on the Family.
Oh.
Unfortunately, they don't do the... It's a pretty strong condensation, but I remember even the Evensong one that was really condensed a great deal. It was a wonderful condensation, so I'm sure they're going to do a good job with it. But back to the Penelope Hope story. One thing I've never really discussed in my introductions, and that's probably why you didn't pick up on it. And that is that when I am putting a collection of stories together, I will have been reading and reading and reading, and gradually certain stories come to the top. And I don't just take last year's rejects and say, which ones am I going to do this year? But everything has to go back on the cutting board, so to speak, and no story, just because it was a runner-up previous year, has any chance of getting in. And so after I've done this for a long period of time, then I start coming up with a first top list, and then I go to the second and the third and the fourth. I think I was close to the 12th. The 12th runs through, and as I get towards the end, I back off from the collection and pretend like I was a master chef, to use a culinary metaphor. Because a great dinner is more than just the sum total of whatever the ingredients in the food might be, or whatever the types of food that are presented. But everything, the tablecloth, the china, the glassware, the music, flowers, every bit of it, the decor, the ambiance, is part of what goes into a dinner that you'll never forget. And so, essentially, I do the same thing with stories. Here I have all these great stories that are finalists, and I say, when I go from one story to the next, you probably notice that I change mood often.
Right.
If I've got one that just leaves you in shambles in terms of emotionally, I will probably go to something light. If I have a really long one, chances are it'll be a short one. I try to weave humor in enough so that you still feel that the overall composite picture is one that leaves you happy at the end, even if there are sad stories.
Right.
And what happens is, just like the Penelope Hope story, year after year after year, certain stories are really wonderful stories, but they don't somehow mesh with that final go-through in which I say, I want people who read this book to just feel, when they're through, that was and that means that certain stories that are wonderful stories, it's just not time for them yet.
Well, I'm certainly glad it was time for this one. It was a beaut. And there are lots of wonderful stories in the book, as every collection every year is. It's just so exciting to know that this is the 20th edition, and the stories are just terrific. There's no diminishing in quality, that's for sure. And you can tell that it's a result of a great deal of prayer and hard work to find these wonderful stories. Now, once again, Joe's webpage is joewheelerbooks.com. And you can order this book and, in fact, the entire set. So check out his website to find out for yourself just how to get them and how to get them sent to your house. And Joe, we've run out of time. I guess I should make this show an hour long sometime, and then we could get everything covered that you have in one of the books.
It's one of the fastest interviews I do every year.
Well, we'll do this again soon, because you've got some more books coming out. So I'll be calling you again soon, and we'll talk again, all right?
Looking forward to it.
Wonderful. Thank you again so much. Merry Christmas, and thanks for sharing these great stories with us.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. God bless you, my friend. Thanks again for joining us for Dr. Joe Wheeler and Christmas in My Heart. This is number 20, and it's available from Pacific Press. And once again, his website, joewheelerbooks.com. Thanks so much for listening on your favorite radio station for On the Book Show. We'll see you next time, same place, right here on the dial. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless, and Merry Christmas.